something happened in the home. Someone possibly was killed there, at least one person, and then they disappeared.
Texas is known for being tough on crime and those who commit it, or at least the ones who get caught.
There are monsters among us.
60% of violent crimes in Texas go unsolved, and a majority of victims rarely make the headlines. Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, gives in-depth accounts of unsolved homicides and missing persons cases throughout the Lone Star State in an attempt to provide a voice for victims and their families.
She was a loving person. That's why after 13 years, it's really bothering me still that nothing's been done, nobody's been found.
Please join Gone Cold Podcast on your favorite podcatcher as we examine these forgotten and often underreported crimes.
You really have to pray and hope for those people that really know something.
Explicit content is found in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. In 2014, Amy Anderson sat down with the KSFY News in South Dakota to recount her terrifying brush with a serial killer. In 1994, she was almost kidnapped. She immediately thought that the man who was attempting to take her down a ditch had plans to rape her, but she never thought that he wanted to murder her. She got away, but how and why? Okay, on to the show. Robert Leroy Anderson was born on December 4, 1969, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to parents Leland and Ruth Anderson. Robert had two older brothers, Lee and Billy, and one younger sister, Lori. Robert was close with his sister, and the pair remained close into adulthood. Robert would always go out of his way to take care of his sister, and later, his nephew. He also had a close relationship with his mother that would last throughout his life. Family would remain a top priority throughout his life. However, Robert did not share the same closeness with his father. According to his mother, Ruth, Leland Anderson was not around much. Shortly after Robert moved out of the family home, his parents divorced. Robert would have minimal contact with his father for the remainder of their lives. Robert was an active, friendly child who enjoyed fishing, camping, and playing basketball at the local YMCA. He was also a Boy Scout. When he wasn't outside, he would spend his time reading comic books. Robert also excelled in school, especially in math class. But that changed after he moved to Kansas City, Missouri in November 1986 with his friend and his friend's family. Robert dropped out of school his junior year of high school because his friend did, since he wasn't going to school. Since he wasn't going to school, Robert got a full-time job at Worlds of Fun in 1987. Worlds of Fun was a 235-acre amusement park in Kansas City. Robert did not work there long before a frightening accident happened. The Orient Express was the first roller coaster to have a kamikaze curve, which is a 90-degree rise to the right or left, followed by a traditional half loop, then a rising half loop, and then a final 90-degree dive, sending the coaster back in the same direction it started. On June 14, 1987, a train that was pulling into the loading station malfunctioned and slammed into the rear of another train inside of the station. 56 passengers were involved in the accident, but only 8 had to be taken to the hospital. An investigation into the accident determined that an unusual fracture inside of a metal support was the cause of the accident. Robert left the amusement park shortly after the accident and moved back to South Dakota. While in South Dakota, Robert tried to get his act together. He lived with his aunt and sister in Brookings. He went back to school, got a job at George's Pizza and Steakhouse, but all of that was short-lived. He dropped out of high school again and left South Dakota to go back to Kansas City in April 1988. While in Kansas City, Robert worked in a warehouse, and it wasn't long before he grew tired of the situation and moved back to Sioux Falls in the fall of 1988. In February 1989, 19-year-old Robert married 17-year-old Elizabeth Ann Nielsen, who was still a senior in high school when the couple got married. They met through an acquaintance, and during their marriage, Robert worked many menial jobs, including as a dishwasher, a stocker, and a laborer. After a year of marriage, their son Seth was born. When Seth was 2 years old, he was diagnosed with leukemia. Fortunately, his cancer went into remission. However, despite his son's serious illness, Robert did not spend a lot of time with the young boy. They spent even less time together after Robert and Elizabeth divorced in 1990. In September 1990, Robert began working at John Morrell & Company as a refrigerator technician. It was also during this time that he began a romantic relationship with his coworker, Elaine Garner. Elaine began a large part of Robert's life, even encouraging him to start a small investment club called Anderson & Friends. Robert and Elaine's son, Zachary, was born in September 1990. A little over a year later, Robert married 21-year-old Elaine in December of 1992. They would go on to have two more children, Nathan in January of 1994 and Samantha in April of 1995. Robert was able to get his GED in June 1995 and began taking courses in engineering and chemistry at South Dakota State University. Robert worked hard towards a mechanical engineering degree and was described as a model student. His desire to become a mechanical engineer was born out of his love for stereo equipment and vehicles, an interest that could be dated back to his childhood. Outside of the classroom, Robert continued pursuing his interests. In March 1996, he began a labor of love by restoring a Ford Bronco. Like so many of the killers we profile, there were two sides to Robert Leroy Anderson. One side, the side he most often showed the world, was a loving family man who worked hard to provide. The other side, his dark side, was seen by Larissa Yvonne Demansky. Born April 28, 1965, in Kiev, Ukraine, Larissa was one of 11 children. Her family and friends described her as hardworking, ambitious, and a happy woman who would become a great wife to Bill Demansky. In 1990, Larissa and her husband, Bill Demansky, moved to the U.S. from the Ukraine. They made the move with Bill's family. The 29-year-old was looking forward to living her new American dream as she and her husband began working at the John Morrell & Company meatpacking plant. Bill would later leave the company to lay floor coverings, but Larissa ended up staying. Bill and Larissa, along with their two daughters, 6-year-old Christina and 5-year-old Regina, just moved into a new home. While Bill worked during the day, Larissa would stay home with the girls and then head to her night shift once Bill came home. While working the night shift, Larissa began a friendship with the maintenance man, Robert Leroy Anderson. Robert became obsessed with Larissa and began stalking her. He shared his desire to kidnap and murder Larissa with his friend, Glenn Walker. Glenn indulged Robert in his fantasies and said he would help Robert carry out his sick plan on Larissa. His initial idea was to lay wheel poppers on the road Larissa drove home and abduct her when she would pull over to change her tire. However, despite the many flat tires Larissa experienced, she never pulled over in an isolated enough place for Robert to feel comfortable enough to kidnap her. He would have to try a new tactic. On August 27, 1994, Larissa, who was 6 weeks pregnant at the time, left her shift at John Morrell & Company at 1 o'clock a.m. Robert approached Larissa in the parking lot, pulled out a knife, and ordered her to get into his car, where Glenn was waiting for both of them. Robert and Glenn drove Larissa to Lake Vermilion. When they stopped at the lake, Glenn watched as Robert dragged Larissa out of the car. He would rape her several times. During this time, Larissa would plead for her life, but Robert ignored her. During later testimony, Glenn would claim that Robert suffocated Larissa with duct tape, then buried her body under a nearby chokecherry bush. The next morning, Bill Demansky woke up to discover his wife had never come home. At 8:46 a.m., he filed a missing persons report. The report described Larissa as 5 feet 9 inches tall, 142 pounds, with blonde hair. It would take 3 years before detectives would be led to her body. it didn't take long for Robert to start looking for his next victim. On November 10, 1994, Amy Anderson was down County Road 106 near T, South Dakota, when a maroon car began to play a strange game of cat and mouse with her. The car would continuously pass her and then drop back. It didn't take long for Amy to feel like something was wrong. Suddenly, one of her tires blew out. Robert's wheel popper finally worked the way he wanted. Amy pulled over and got out of the car. Robert also pulled over and got out of his car, leaving Glenn inside. Amy noticed that Robert left his door open and thought it was strange, but she didn't want to be rude, so she thanked Robert as he walked towards her, saying nothing. As she reached into her trunk to get her jack, Robert grabbed her from behind around her waist and tried to drag her to a nearby ditch. A surge of adrenaline flowed through her body, and Amy grabbed her trunk and pulled herself back towards her car. The momentum caused Robert to lose his grip and fall backwards. Amy saw another car approaching them on the road. Praying that it wasn't a setup by Robert, Amy waved down the car. She went to the T Police Department to file a report on what happened and then went home to Sioux Falls. Robert got away. I'm going to pause the case right here so you can hear a word from our sponsor. The incident must have scared Robert, because things were quiet for about a year and a half. That all changed on July 29, 1996, when Piper Straley disappeared. Piper was a beautiful 28-year-old woman from Texas. She met her husband Vance at Bible College in Oregon. The couple got married and began a family soon after. Piper lived in a trailer home in Canastota, South Dakota, with Vance and their two children, Shayna, who was nearly four, and Nathan, who was two. The Straleys were a deeply religious couple who set up their own part-time ministry, the Prairie View Bible Camp for Children. Vance also worked as a plumber, and Piper worked part-time at Southeastern Mental Health Center. On the morning of July 29th, Vance left for his plumbing job at 6:30 a.m. Normally, Piper would leave a couple hours later and bring the children to their babysitter, Mrs. Jordanson. She called Mrs. Jordanson at 9:20 a.m. to let her know that she and the children were on their way, but they never arrived. At noon, Vance called home. He usually heard from Piper by this time and wanted to make sure she did leave for work. No one answered the phone, so Vance left a message on the answering machine asking, "Honey, where are you?" By 3 p.m., Piper's coworkers were concerned. She had not shown up for work and had not called in, something that was very out of character for her. Patty Sinclair called Piper's home looking to check in on her to make sure she was all right. Instead of Piper answering the phone, Patty was shocked to hear the voice of Piper's daughter, Shayna. The little girl was hysterical, screaming that she didn't want her mommy to die. Shocked, Patty directed a coworker to call the McCook County Sheriff's Office. Patty had been disconnected with Shayna, so she called the house again. Shayna answered the phone again, and Patty stayed on the phone with her for 45 minutes until Sheriff Gene Taylor arrived. While on the phone, Shayna told Patty that her mom left a while ago with a man in a black car. Patty testified about the phone call, saying, quote, "As I recall, I asked her to calm down because I could not understand her, and she said that she didn't want her mommy to die, and she said that twice. She didn't want her daddy to die, and she didn't want her daddy to be hurt, as I recall." When Sheriff Gene Taylor arrived at the home, he found both children and the family dog, but no sign of Piper. The trailer was a mess. When Vance had left that morning, it was neat and tidy. The children were unharmed. Nathan barely made a sound while Shayna was in tears. Vance was still unaware of what was happening. After work, he drove to the babysitter's home, expecting to find his children. When he saw that the children weren't there, he called home looking for Piper. When the police answered, he rushed home. Police searched the home and found Piper's purse and glasses. They also found a step on the porch that was overturned with nails sticking up. This led them to believe that a struggle had taken place. There was also an expended 9mm shell casing in the driveway. Two things were found to be missing from the home: Piper's black and white shirt that said Code Zero on the front and a blue tent belonging to Nathan. Sheriff Taylor tried to extract a story from Shayna. The frightened little girl told the sheriff that a mean man driving a black car with black wheels came into the trailer and grabbed their mother. There was a lot of yelling, and then the man shot his gun. Piper told the kids to run and hide. That's when the man grabbed Nathan's tent, a birthday gift the boy had received the night before. Vance came home and scooped his sobbing daughter in his arms. When she told her father that Nathan's tent was taken, Vance tried to calm her by saying that it was okay, they had another tent. Shayna told her father that it was not okay, that her mother was going to die, and she's not coming back. Police were able to find several witnesses who saw a black truck or SUV in the vicinity of the Straley home that day. Donnie Thiel was a highway worker who was driving a road grader by the Straley home at around 9:45 a.m. When he approached the house, he saw a faded black Bronco or Blazer turn around on the road near the trailer. Donnie saw the same vehicle two more times that morning, once at around 10:45 a.m. and again at 12:30. Daryl Goth went to the home of a relative to measure their roof at around 10 a.m. on the 29th. The home was northeast and across the road from the Straley trailer, only about a block and a half away. While he was measuring the roof, he heard the Straley's trailer door open, and then he heard unidentifiable noises. Then the door closed. Daryl left the home at around 11 a.m. and saw a dark pickup go by him and head north. The vehicle then did a U-turn in the road about a quarter mile away and headed south. This was just before Donnie passed by with the grader. Tim and Sarah Beener passed by the Straley trailer around 11:45 a.m. They saw Shayna and Nathan standing by the roadside all alone looking upset. The Beeners came back around 12:10 p.m. and saw a Bronco blocking the driveway. They also saw a man in a black baseball cap walking away from the trailer to the Bronco. Despite the eyewitnesses, police didn't have much to go on until 3 days later when they spoke with Vance again. Vance remembered a man visiting their trailer 3 days before Piper disappeared. It was around 7:30 a.m. on a Friday morning that a man driving a black Ford Bronco came to the trailer. Vance remembered he acted strange, mumbling about how he'd passed the trailer several times in the past few months. When Piper joined Vance at the door, the man asked about enrolling his children in Bible camp. Vance told the man that they were closed for the year but could take his information and add him to the list for 1997. Piper wrote down the man's information. By the next morning, police had identified the stranger as 26-year-old Robert Leroy Anderson. Vance and Shayna were shown a photo lineup using Robert's driver's license picture, but they were unable to pick him out. Undeterred, police went to Robert's home on July 30th to request an interview. Robert agreed and drove his blue Ford Bronco to the police station. The interview began around 1:45 p.m. and lasted until 9:26 p.m. During his interview, Robert seemed relaxed and comfortable. He admitted to being at the Straley residence on July 26th to inquire about the Bible camp. He also admitted to being there on the 29th. At first, he told police that he pulled into the driveway and saw no vehicles, so he assumed no one was home and left. But when police confronted him, saying that there was a vehicle in the driveway, Robert changed his story. Now, he said, he saw the car, but backed out of the driveway without ever getting out of his car. He told police that he knew Piper was missing and that her children were left alone. He said there were no children in the driveway when he pulled up. Robert's story changed again, and he said that he did get out of his vehicle and knock on the door of the trailer, but there was no answer. He did hear the children inside at that time, and Robert could offer no solid alibi for the 29th. When police asked if he would take a polygraph, Robert refused, stating they were unreliable. After his interview, police filed for search warrants for Robert's house, his Ford Bronco, and the clothes he was wearing during the interview. Inside of Robert's Bronco, which was close to the color described by the eyewitnesses, police found a walkie-talkie, a shovel with fresh dirt, a pair of handcuffs, two handcuff keys, duct tape, eye bolts, chains, and a rope. The dirt on the shovel would eventually match dirt found at the Big Sioux River. The back of the Bronco had a platform made of particle boards and lumber. The platform was covered with a synthetic carpet and cushioning. There were two metal hoops attached to the boards with metal screws. Two pairs of human hairs were found on the platform. The hairs were consistent with Piper's hair and inconsistent with Anderson, Anderson's wife, and Anderson's children. Police also found a receipt from the 29th showing that Anderson had purchased duct tape, a paintbrush, and a paint bucket from a Maynard's in Sioux Falls at 8:13 a.m. Police also found receipts showing the purchase of black tempera paint from Ben Franklin Craft Store in Sioux Falls on the 25th. When police interviewed the Ben Franklin Craft Store cashier, she said that Anderson asked her if the paint would easily wash off. The cashier was able to identify Anderson in a photo lineup. The find made more sense after police noted black specks of paint on the Bronco. When tested, the paint was the exact same tempera paint Anderson bought at the Ben Franklin Craft Store. Police later determined through testing that it would take approximately 22 minutes to paint a Bronco the same size as his. When they painted the car, they noticed that the paint dried quickly. When dry, the paint gave the Bronco a dull black look. This is important because a witness said that the Bronco looked faded. After the paint dried, police were able to easily wash off the paint, but there was some residue left, just like with Anderson's car. This led police to believe that it was completely plausible that he could quickly wash off the paint so his Bronco would return to its original blue right after kidnapping Piper. Police found more evidence inside of Robert's house. They found human blood on a pair of jeans in a dirty laundry basket. The jeans also had a mixed sample of blood and semen from more than one person. Robert's wife and children were excluded as being the source of the DNA. Piper could not be included or excluded as the source of the DNA. Police interviewed Robert's neighbors and received an interesting statement from Dan Johnson. Dan recalled seeing Robert carefully clean the interior of his Bronco. Robert then left, returned around 2 p.m., and again cleaned the interior of his Bronco. After police met Robert, they realized that he looked completely different from the driver's license photo they showed Vance and Shayna. His hair was much shorter and was receding. He was also clean-shaven except for a mustache. Police had Shayna and Vance come in for a second photo lineup on August 1st. With the updated photo, Vance and Shayna were immediately able to pick Anderson out of the lineup. When Shayna picked Anderson out of the lineup, she said that this was the man who took her mommy and that her mommy was going to die because he was going to kill her. Although police had a suspect, there was still some gaps in the timeline that they needed to fill in. Here's what they did know. They knew that Vance called the house at around 12 p.m., but got no answer. Instead, the answering machine picked up. They knew that Piper didn't show up to work at 3 p.m. They knew that the last time the Bronco was seen at the trailer was at 12:30 p.m. And they knew that Patty talked to Shayna on the phone from 3 o'clock to 4:50. Police felt confident that they had their guy. On August 2nd, they arrested Robert and charged him for kidnapping Piper Straley. But the police were far from done. They still needed to find Piper's body. Police launched a massive search for Piper. On September 29th, thanks to botanist Gary Larson, they focused their search on the Big Sioux River, due to vegetation found in his Bronco that would have been local to the area. During their search, they found a vibrator, a partially burned candle, a clump of duct tape matching the duct tape Anderson had in his van, and half of a black and white t-shirt that said Code Zero on the front. The duct tape had a large number of light brown human hairs attached to it, as well as human blood on it. Although the type of blood was unidentifiable, the shirt and duct tape were found very close to each other. The other half of the Code Zero t-shirt was found on July 29th. A citizen found it underneath an underpass near Baltic on Interstate 29. He picked it up because he thought it was a referee's shirt. When he saw that it wasn't, he threw it under his car seat and forgot about it until he saw something on the news. He turned it into police on November 15th. The following spring, Robert went on trial for the kidnapping charge. He was not charged with murder, as there was not sufficient evidence to secure a conviction. Based on evidence, witnesses, and informant information, prosecutors put forth the following story. Robert drove to the Straley's trailer on the 29th. He handcuffed Piper, retrieved the note with his name and phone number, carried her out to the Bronco, and then drove to the thinly settled area near the river. Robert then secured her to the platform of his vehicle and gagged her with duct tape. He cut her shirt open with his folding knife, sexually assaulted her, and killed her, and then disposed of her body. Anderson then returned to the Straley residence and retrieved a watch he had dropped during the struggle, as well as the expended shell casing from the round that Shayna reported he had fired. The second trip to the residence accounts for the Straley's neighbor seeing him walk from the trailer to the Bronco. Dan Johnson and other witnesses placed him back at home in the Bronco, now blue once more, by 2 o'clock that afternoon, which means that somewhere along the way, he also stopped and washed off all the black paint. In May 1997, Robert was found guilty of kidnapping Piper. He would be sentenced to life imprisonment. But this was not the end of his days in court. Because of Robert's trial, Amy Anderson's attempted abduction was brought to the forefront on March 11, 1997. She positively identified Robert Anderson as the man who tried to kidnap her. Because he was ultimately found guilty of Piper's kidnapping, he would never stand trial for the attempted kidnapping of Amy. Shortly after Robert's conviction, Glenn Walker confessed to police that he was Robert's accomplice in the abduction and murder of Larissa Demansky in 1994. He revealed that he and Robert methodically planned out the kidnapping, but swore he did not participate in the rape and murder. While he did help plan and carry out the kidnapping, Glenn got scared when Robert's behavior began to escalate. He left as she was raped and murdered, but returned to help Robert bury the body. On May 20, 1997, Glenn Walker led police to a shallow grave at Lake Vermilion. Police dug up shell casings and bone fragments, but the entire body was not there. This puzzled police, as it did not look like the grave was disturbed by animals. Also, at and near the grave, police found a pair of work gloves, Larissa's shoes, a part of her belt, her jewelry, and pieces of her clothing. In August 1997, Robert's cellmate, Jeremy Bruner, contacted the Attorney General with information about Robert's crimes. He said that Robert bragged about killing Piper and Larissa and provided Jeremy with details about the crime. Jeremy also told authorities that Robert bragged about being a serial killer who kept trophies at his grandmother's house. He even gave specific locations as to where the trophies were hidden. Robert also approached Jeremy about killing Glenn Walker because Robert was worried Glenn would talk. Jeremy agreed but had no intention of carrying out the murder. Instead, he took his information to the police in exchange for a shorter prison sentence. On August 26, 1997, police searched Robert's grandmother's home and found Larissa's necklace, Piper's wedding ring, a 9mm pistol, 2 handcuffs, and a partially loaded clip. They found these things in the basement ceiling where Jeremy said Robert told him they were hidden. On September 4, 1997, Robert was charged with the murder of Larissa Demansky, as well as the rape and murder of Piper Straley. His trial was scheduled to begin in March 1999. Although the court did not hear from Shayna Straley, her description of the events was relayed to the court, as well as eyewitness testimony and the testimony from Jeremy Brunner. The evidence was overwhelming. On April 6, the jury found Robert guilty of one count of kidnapping, one count of rape, and two counts of murder. 3 days later, Robert was sentenced to death by lethal injection. Glenn Walker, Robert's accomplice, was arrested on August 22, 1998. He was tried in March 2000. Glenn pled guilty to the attempted kidnapping of Amy Anderson, accessory to kidnapping, and first-degree murder and conspiracy to kidnap Larissa Demansky. He received a total of 30 consecutive years behind bars at the South Dakota State Penitentiary. In January 2002, Robert filed for a death sentence appeal with the South Dakota Supreme Court. He wouldn't live long enough to see the outcome. In December 2002, Robert's father, Leland, completed suicide. He died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Those close to Robert said that this would ultimately play a part in Robert's death. On March 30, 2003, Robert Leroy Anderson completed suicide. He was found in a segregation cell. He had hung himself with a sheet tied to a bar. He had been placed in isolation because he was caught with a razor blade. Robert left a half-page suicide note for his mother and sister. After his death, the South Dakota Supreme Court dismissed Robert's appeal. Documents showed that more than likely, his conviction and sentence would have been upheld. In December 2015, 46-year-old Glenn Wallace was released early from prison for good behavior. He was completely free the day he left prison. There was no parole or probation. He told the Department of Corrections he had plans to leave South Dakota. Okay, fan club members, as I conclude this episode, my one question to you is, how will you sleep tonight? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and positively review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCpod, Instagram at TCFC_podcast, Facebook.com/TCFCpodcast, and of course, our website is TrueCrimeFanClub.com. If you have an episode request, send us an email, TCFCpod@gmail.com. Music for the show was composed by Nico at We Talk of Dreams. Check him out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or WeTalkOfDreams.com. This episode was researched by Haley Gray and Brittany Martinez and written by Brittany Martinez.